Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to a brand new Arsblog Arscast right here on arsblog.com. How are you? Hope you're well. If you're an Arsenal fan, I'm pretty sure you are after what we witnessed last night, a 2-1 win over Wolves at the Emirates, coming from behind, a late Nicolas Pepe equaliser, and a super, super late winner from Alexandre Lacazette. I know officially it's not his goal. I know it's gone down as an own goal, but for various reasons that I don't have to explain to anybody, thank you very much, I'm choosing to believe it was a Lacazette goal, because I think from that perspective, it's a lot more positive for Arsenal and a lot more positive for him. We're going to get straight on with this particular conversation. With me to talk about it all, one of the co-hosts of the excellent Stadio podcast, it's Ryan Hunt. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, Andrew.
How are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Do I get to say goodly morning?
If you want. I think you can.
Mama made it. Goodly morning to you, Andrew.
And goodly morning to you. James is not here because, of course, he is doing his stage show, so he wasn't able to see the match last night, even if somebody did come up on stage and tell him that Arsenal had won right in the middle of his show. Maybe we'll try and touch base with James a little bit later on. But I'm trying to figure out where to start with this one, because it's such an interesting game to look at in its entire context, because of the position of the two teams in the table, what a win for them would have meant, what the game state was, the scenario that we got ourselves into. You know, it wasn't ideal, it's fair to say. And there's part of me that just wants to fucking talk about the last couple of minutes for the next hour. So maybe we'll start with some of the stuff that, you know, led us to that moment, that eruption of enjoyment towards the end when it looked for a time that it was going to be a bit of a frustrating night for us. And, you know, for the conversation that we might have had to have on the podcast this morning.
where to begin? To be honest, my main takeaway was that, as frustrating as it was, I didn't think Arsenal played that bad.
Sure.
And this isn't a Swansea 2010 on a Monday night where we lose 2-1 and they only have one shot on target kind of vibe. This is a good side. All the stats that were coming out about it, about how they haven't lost a game where they've led since 2018. If you just run back through, we talk about Wolves quite a lot in Stadio, just how impressive they're and close their games are, and they have been all season. Mm. I mean, even the Man City game away, you know, Man City scraped through that, and that was only after Raul Jimenez got sent off. So this is a good football team.
Yeah.
A very efficient football team. And I think also for the kind of team that Arsenal tend to struggle to match up against, they kind of remind me of those super efficient Spurs teams where we went through a phase that we just couldn't deal with them. You know, this a real collective, almost like a hive. They were kind of like a hive mind. You know, I suppose I should use the term pack, considering they're called Wolves. but teams that we tend to struggle against and who don't need many opportunities to hurt you. And I think we saw that. You know, their chance was obviously an Arsenal error. They jumped on it straight away. And then they had that second one. Was it quite early in the second half? The one that went through Ramsdale's legs and he kind of caught up, and that was just, it just came out of nowhere. And I think that was quite interesting, seeing the contrast in the performances. I thought Arsenal had more of the ball. They created more chances, but the chances that Wolves did create seemed to be way more dangerous.
Yeah.
Instantly.
That was my sense of it, to be honest, because I agree with you in that we did play quite well and we controlled the game, and we obviously had lots of attempts. I think by the 75th minute, we had had 22 attempts on goal to Wolves' 5, 3 on target each, something like that. But to me, it did feel like the danger that Wolves posed was a little more potent than ours, right? Because there was the goal, the early goal. And then there was a very, very good chance for Raul Jimenez when he got between the two central defenders and dragged a shot wide. And I was fearing the worst there. And there was another moment where I think some of our sloppiness or whatever you want to call it in the first half, we just weren't quite there. We weren't quite on it as we were in other games. And there was a moment when Gabriel could have just cleared the ball from inside our box. And instead, he tried to clip it over the defender and play it up the line, which in one way is admirable. But when you're a bit shaky at the back anyway, sometimes you just need to put your foot through it. You know, you don't have to always play out from the back. And from there, they got, I think this could have been late in the first half, but they got a cross from their right-hand side. Jimenez with another header. It went not far wide. And those moments were kind of worrying to me because one of the things that I think we've been impressed by is how compact we've been, how well organized we've been as a defensive unit, how we're not really giving up those good chances that were kind of a hallmark of this team for the last few years, where we could have control, we could play well, but the opposition were able to cut through us at will and they could have these fantastic chances. So that to me was a little bit worrying in terms of the way we were playing in this first half. And when you think about Wolves and how good they are defensively, how few goals they concede in the Premier League, I think I was saying to Lewis, myself and Lewis were talking on the preview podcast on Patreon, the last thing you want to do in this game is go a goal down against Wolves and have them play to their strengths, because they are organized, they are well-drilled, they are also hugely cynical, which is, I'm not being critical about that, but they are a team that knows how to play the game and play the game, if you know what I mean. So, you know, to combat that as well as trying to get goals against a team that don't concede a lot of goals, I think it was always going to be quite difficult. So in terms of how this game went in the early stages, I don't think it could have been much worse. I mean, it could have been worse, obviously, if Wolves had scored those goals. But the scenario you wanted to avoid is exactly the scenario that we foisted upon ourselves with a very, very sloppy concession of a goal.
Yeah, I mean, the only sides who have conceded fewer goals in the Premier League this season are the top three. And one of those is Liverpool, who have conceded the same amount. So this is an extremely, I'd say, elite defensive unit in the Premier League. In a league that is deep in terms of how strong it is now. Moose and I talk about this on Stadio all the time, about how deep the Premier League is now and this kind of solidifying of the Premier League middle class, which is just way stronger than it was even 5 years ago, to be honest, let alone 10.
I agree.
So I think it's quite hard. I think as fans, sometimes we judge these fixtures through the prism of history, and it's kind of just not like that anymore. These sides are just so good. Even you saw how good Brentford were in the early stages of the season. They're obviously falling off a bit now, but I mean, I just thought after the game, well, to be honest, from a personal point of view, because this week has just been grim on multiple levels outside of football, let alone in football, I didn't realize how much I really needed that.
Afterwards,
it's been a while since, and I know that late wins are great and it's really easy to get caught up in the euphoria but I was saying to a friend of mine after the game, I didn't actually realize how much I really needed that.
Yeah.
And to the point where I actually screenshotted it and posted it on Twitter saying that I was going to be on Arsblog tomorrow. He said, you know, I was a bit gutted it was an own goal. And I just said, I couldn't give a fuck. I could not care any less. Because this feels like, I mean, this feels like one of those wins that could have very easily been the game that we could have pointed to in the summer as where it all changed, and that's where the race for the top four kind of fell away. You know, it's easy to over egg stuff like this, but I do think that having had a bit of, you know, having slept on it and gone back and rewatched it and read some of the stuff about it, it really feels like the conditions that led to it, a good side, an early penalty shout that would have been the thing that we would have gone back to had we not won the game. Wolves could have had a couple more, to be honest, or at least one more, and then Arsenal really turning the screw and getting a late win against a direct rival. One of these games in hand that Arsenal need to be extremely careful not to waste those opportunities. It just really felt like a win that was, it felt like more than a win.
Yes.
You know? And I think that's why that it was, it felt so important during the game. And I think the fan, I think you could tell with the atmosphere in the stadium that everyone knew how big this fixture was.
Yeah. No, I agree with you as well. You know, from a personal point of view, I was at a funeral all day yesterday. On top of everything else that was going on in the world, my aunt passed away this week, and you're sort of, yeah, but it's one of those where you look to football as the kind of escape that it can be and should be. And I know, look, it's a serious business. We all love it, and it is serious, and we spend our lives talking and analyzing it and, you know, obsessing over it. But you get to the end of the game, you get to the 90th minute plus 6 minutes of injury time, and that goes in the back of the net. And just for those however many seconds, there is nothing else. Just nothing else, and there is nothing like it. That feeling, that experience, and knowing that, you know, I'm sitting watching my TV or my computer screen and you're sitting watching your TV and those 60,000 people are in the stadium and there's millions of people around the world and we are all just sharing this moment in exactly the same way. It's, there's something so pure about it, and I think we all need that at times. But let's just go back to that moment at the start of the game. The penalty shout that wasn't given. I don't want to dwell too much on referees or officiating because so much has been said about it over the last couple of weeks, but I find it exhausting to have to contend with not just the opposition and good opposition and well-drilled opposition and improving opposition, as you say, you know, the quality of teams in the Premier League, but it feels like week on week on week we are having to contend with outside forces that we've got no control over as well. And on the one hand, it is hugely frustrating. It really is, to see decisions like that not go our way. And I'm thinking of the Tomiyasu stamp in the Everton game and MacArthur on Saka in the Crystal Palace game. Decisions which could have had a really, really big impact on those games and the results, because they should have been down to 10 men before halftime on both of those. But at the same time, I'm trying to look at it in a sanguine maybe is not quite the right word, but if I'm looking for positives from anything and trying to find positives in things, it's that moments like that, I think, genuinely are contributing to the us against them mentality that is starting to become quite entrenched among Arsenal fans. I said this to somebody this morning, that like the us against them thing is so good. Because for ages, as Arsenal fans, there's been too much us against us. Do you know what I mean? And I love the fact that there is this spirit inside the stadium. And I love the fact that, you know, the Wolves celebrations celebrate in the right way. And, you know, these things which are kind of inconsequential, really, when it comes to the nuts and bolts of it, but they're bringing fans together and they're helping fans get behind what seems to be real progress from this team, something that is developing that we can all absolutely hang our hats on. Like, you know, nobody's taking anything for granted, I don't think. But you look at the players, you look at the manager, you look at the connections, the communication, the sense of something that is happening is really shared now among fans.
Yeah, I think the last time I was on, we were talking about how this iteration of Arsenal kind of reminds me a little bit of when NBA teams pick up a load of really interesting young draft picks and you know they're going to kind of be a bit ropey for a few years, but you see the direction of travel. And I think that it's something that you can look at a few other clubs who are going through it at the moment. You know, one on the other side of North London. And I think that one of the main issues is that there isn't really like an identifiable direction of travel.
Yeah.
Because when there is, people really invest. And I think that what Arteta has done, I remember chatting to Ken early on Second Captains, I think it was just before Christmas, and that we were talking about how, you know, Arteta has almost had these phases of management. It was the initial kind of just stop, for want of a better term, stop the bleeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then the recovery period, and then the really like, okay, now it's my time to build. It's almost like watching Grand Designs, you know, you got to live in the caravan next to the spot for a little while and it sucks. But then eventually afterwards, Kevin McLeod comes back and is just like, wow, look at this. I really like what you've done here.
How much over budget are you? Oh, only about exactly. 170 million.
why did you decide to do this when you're pregnant with twins? Why does everyone do that on Grand Designs? I've no idea. But I think we're in this stage of with Arteta's management now where I think this is what he tried to create. And I think he deserves a lot of credit for kind of keeping his mouth shut when he could have really gone after a lot of people during the process to get here. Now, I'm not saying that all of a sudden we're done, we're sorted, we're good to go. But that direction of travel has been so easily identifiable, especially this season, I think. I think this is why I was quite zen after the Brentford game, because I just thought, like, if we're still in this position in October, then we need to worry in terms of what the squad looks like and in terms of what the results are like. But everything has just been a slow building process. And I think that while there are going to be some results that are crap, because this is still a team figuring it out. However, I think as we're heading into March, if you'd asked any Arsenal fan after that Brentford game that this is where Arsenal would be heading into March, I don't think anyone would have believed you. And I think it's really important to take those wins, because that's essentially what football is about, right? You don't have to, it's not like, it's why all this celebration police stuff just really pisses me off for everyone, not just Arsenal, any, like when Spurs beat Man City, it's just like, let them enjoy it, man. That's an amazing win. You know, like that is a big, big win. Let teams and fans support their wins no matter how big or small they are. It doesn't have to be like, Champions League is the only barometer of success. Mm. And if you don't get there, then it's failure. And I think Arsenal have really been through it over the last few years. It's been, you know, Arteta as a manager has probably had to deal with, if you actually wrote a list of all of the stuff that he's had to deal with in his first senior management job, it's kind of wild.
Yeah.
And take those wins, take those victories. I think Arsenal probably a little bit ahead of schedule. And it might tail off a little bit before it gets better again, but this is, I think it's, despite there being obvious flaws, it's still hugely positive.
Sure. I don't disagree with that, apart from the bit about Spurs. You know, I don't want them to enjoy anything. You know, let's be realistic here. No,
I believe it. You know, it's just football karma, Andrew. It's just like, you know, if you can turn around and say, hey, guys, I didn't take the piss out of you, so don't take the piss out of
me. No. It doesn't work for me at all. You know, I understand the being magnanimous and all that kind of stuff, but, you know, there's a line.
The difference is this is an Arsenal podcast.
Exactly.
And on Stadio, we are a neutral podcast.
Well, that's exactly it. You got to put your Arsenal hat on a bit.
Got to be diplomatic.
That's fair. let's talk about what the scenario was at halftime then.
Yes.
Because our good friend Orbino, who pulls out the stats for us for Opta, reminded us that Wolves, in the 12 games that they've gone ahead in this season, have not lost. They've won 11 and drawn one of those.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's the bigger one, which is that under Mikel Arteta, amazingly, Arsenal have never turned around a halftime deficit to win a game, which is kind of mental, really. Yeah. It is one of those stats. I looked at it, though, and like I can't say that I was hugely confident. Like, I was worried. When we got the equalizer, I was like, you know what? Fucking fair play. We got the equalizer. I'll take a point out of this. You know, if you'd offered me a point 5 minutes beforehand, I would have bitten your hand off and the whole lot. But there was a little part of my brain that went, the law of averages suggests that at some point we have to do this. We have to do this. And, I think to have overcome those two statistics, and I know those are things, you know, they're just facts and what have you. Those are things that we that we can put to one side to an extent, but it was still a situation whereby we really had to do something that we haven't done before in order to win this game. And holy shit, we did it. We'll come to the specifics of it in a minute, but I want to talk about a couple of players who I think were instrumental to it. Let's leave aside Thomas Partey's shooting for a moment, because I'm not sure what the solution is there. And
I just jump in really quick, because I wrote a tweet about this last night. One day, one of those is going to fly in the top corner, and it's going to be absolutely unbelievable. It's going to be a great day.
It will
be. But there were a load of people in my mentions saying, are you too young to remember John Jensen? I was just like, no, I'm not, actually. No. But a little different. But thanks.
A little anyway, different. Sorry. Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, let's leave aside the shooting, but I thought he was very good yesterday. Yeah. Martin Odegaard, whose presence and seniority in this team is really quite interesting, because he's only 23, but he feels like a senior player, even though he's barely a couple of years older than Saka and Smith Rowe and Martinelli, you know. He was very good. And I think the much maligned or oft maligned Granit Xhaka as well, in this slightly more advanced midfield role, which I think is interesting. I wonder in part if it's to keep him out of trouble in a way. You know, where he gets into trouble is making challenges deep in our half. Or midway into it. That tends to be where he gets into the most trouble. And we're keeping him away from there. But we're also asking him to use the ball and help us progress it into the final third. And I think he did that especially well in the final 20 minutes or so, when we were really starting to put the pressure on. That midfield trio, and I know they're not necessarily an archetypal or classic midfield three or whatever, but those three feel to me like a hugely important component in what the rest of this team can do.
Yeah, I mean, midfields are important. Yeah. They affect everything around them, and it's arguably the most important area on the pitch if you're going to focus on one to get right, because the accumulative impact that good midfield combinations have, still hugely underrated, I think, even in the modern game. I think we've seen before that I think Granit Xhaka is never quite as bad as people try to make out. However, there are obvious flaws there and that are often quite highlighted. And what I think Arteta has done really smartly is try to tailor the system to accentuate his strengths, and just eliminate the possibility of him getting dragged in where his weakness has become apparent. So like Granit Xhaka running towards his own box, trying to make a last dish tackle, is like, as an Arsenal fan, one of the things that I would rather never ever see again in my life, ever.
Yeah.
You know, however, him dropping into that kind of left back pocket to gather the ball and progress play is a real strength of his, and something I think goes a little bit underappreciated. And he did that a couple of times last night in the Wolves game. So I think what happens is, like, Partey and Ødegaard are very mobile. And I think Ødegaard's defensive work, let's say, I'm not saying he's a, you know, going to be charging in and slide tackling and stuff like that, but I think he can track. He's got a really, you know, he covered the more ground than any other Arsenal player this season.
Yeah, apparently over 12K in one game. So,
and I think that impact can't be underestimated. I think Partey as well is one of those players that he needs a couple of people who are going to be quite vocal around him. Like, I watched him a lot at Atleti, and, you know, the whole time he has like someone like Koke there, who's the captain, you know, who's really kind of taking the leadership aspect away and really letting Partey just play. And I think that this midfield configuration and the slight tweak of pushing Xhaka a little bit higher has allowed Partey to have a little bit more space to dominate in a football sense without taking out, without giving him extra quote unquote leadership responsibilities.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So it's just a really nice balance. It just feels like a really nice balance. I still think that in terms of an upgrade for the summer, another more mobile kind of version of Xhaka would be perfect for that midfield if you're going to go to the next level. This is why in January I was saying quite a few times that because of Barcelona's financial situation and the rumors coming out about Chelsea dangling 50 million at them for Frankie de Jong, I was just like, if Arsenal are going to make a signing, actually, I would go for that. When Arsenal were in for Vlahovic, as great as Vlahovic is, but I personally thought chucking 50 million at Barca and then maybe the other 20 million for Artur Cabral would have been the better move for the whole squad.
Yeah.
And Frankie de Jong has started playing some of his best football this season since January, which is a shame because I think he was probably gettable for a little bit.
Yeah.
But he's the kind of player who would be perfect in there instead of Xhaka. But having Xhaka to be able to come in for games, but not having him as the number one for every game.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, I think I just saw a story this morning when Xavi was calling De Jong a genius. So I don't think he's going to be going anywhere anytime soon.
Not now. I think there was definitely a period and a window because Barcelona had, not wanting to go off topic, but Barcelona had so few flippable assets and he was one of them that if a club had really moved for him, I think it could have been gettable. And he's been on record saying that he wanted to go to Arsenal before Barcelona. Do that route, but yeah. Oh well.
Look, I think you're right, though. You know that upgrade on Xhaka in that particular position, because I think one of the things that if you look at Odegaard on the right hand side and Xhaka on the left hand side, ostensibly as those kind of eights, if you like, the difference in the quickness of feet is certainly something, you know. But I think Xhaka did really well in that role. I think he had some moments where he really kept the ball and a couple of little sharp turns, a little nutmeg here and there as well, you know, and he really kept us going forward. So we should move on to talk about how we turned this, because it was the 82nd minute when we scored the equalizer. Gabriel Martinelli came off. Nicolas Pepe came on. Bukayo Saka shifted out to the left-hand side. And then I think probably the more interesting substitution is Eddie Nketiah coming on for Cedric Suarez.
Yeah.
Which was a touch of the Arsene Wenger's in it, in that you take off a fullback, you put on a forward. We know we're not blessed with a great deal of depth at striker. We don't have too many forward options. Smith Rowe wasn't in the squad last night. So the manager didn't have a great deal to deal with or to work with off the bench. I think Omari Hutchinson was on the bench, but you know, he's a young kid.
Yeah.
Maybe you throw him on with 5 minutes to go. If you still haven't got anything, last gasp, throw the dice and all that kind of stuff. But I was happy to see that change. I don't mean it to be a reflection on Cedric, who I think played well. It was more about what it stated, the intent that the manager had to try and change the game. We're taking a defender off. We're putting a forward on. We're just going to get more men in your final third and see what happens. I know it's a little more, not quite as industrial as that, but certainly it was an attacking change, a positive change, and it played a big part in the first goal, which we saw from Nicolas Pepe. Lovely ball from Odegaard over the top. Eddie did really well to pull it back. And the more I watch the touch, turn, and finish from Nicolas Pepe, the more I'm impressed by it. It is absolutely sensational. For a guy, you know, that hasn't played a lot this season for us, for a guy who's been on the sidelines and must be hugely frustrated not to be more involved, to have that composure and to have that ability to work that situation with so many Wolves players around him, it's quite funny when you look at the replay, they're looking in the goal, go, how the fuck did that go in? Because it all happens in such a swift... what's the word I'm looking for? It was just like one
moment.
Yeah, very great.
It's one fluid moment.
What fluid? That's exactly the word I was looking for. Yeah. It was fluid. Touch, turn, shoot, bang, in goal, and it was fucking great.
Yeah, I mean, this is kind of like the perfect role for Nicolas Pepe at Arsenal, if you think about it. 20 minutes to go, add a chaos agent in there, and he, you know, for all the talk about Nicolas Pepe, he offers something that no one else in that Arsenal squad can do. And that's a really handy tool to have. And if he'd cost 30 million euros or 30 million pounds, people would be like, this guy's perfect for this kind of role. I think the price clouds judgment a little bit over him. But I was thinking about this actually last night. I was like, who else in the Premier League could bring on a 70 odd million pound player who does that? And I was thinking, Man City, maybe?
Man City, yeah.
Like, even Chelsea don't really have, or Liverpool. Liverpool have players that can hurt you, but they're all very much like plug and play at Liverpool. There isn't really anyone else like that in the top six, maybe, who have that kind of chaos agent to bring off the bench who cost around that much money. I know I'm being hugely, I'm generalizing a lot there, but
yeah.
But to me, I think if Arsenal can really fill out the squad, then having that role for Pepe where he can play against teams who are going to sit deep, who aren't just going to let you thread passes through them, you need that in a little bit of individualism sometimes. And I think he's so good at that. It reminded me a little bit of a goal that you'd kind of see the Arsenal social admin put up from training.
It's just like a kind of
thing they do in training and be like, wow, Pepe in training, look at this kind of thing. Mm. But I mean, the last time we were on after the Man United game, we were talking about subs a lot and how we thought Arteta got the subs quite wrong in that game at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
This time, both subs were perfect. And he deserves so much credit for that because also I think Nketiah, not wanting to move on from Pepe too quickly, but I think Nketiah, he genuinely changed the game. I think it was one of the best performances I've seen, even though it was obviously not a huge amount of time. But in terms of, there have been games where Eddie Nketiah has come on and it's just felt very flat.
Yes, I agree. You know? I agree.
And I think what happened here was that he really injected some energy and some purpose and some, I don't know, a little bit more directness into Arsenal in that last 20
minutes.
More
presence.
Yeah,
more
definitely.
Presence in their final third because, you know, we know how good they are defensively and they know how good they are defensively as well. But when you add, as you say, the chaos, the controlled chaos, I think might be a better way of putting it, of Pepe, but also then the presence of Nketiah, who is willing to run and get in behind and stretch a bit. And that goal doesn't happen without Nketiah's run. The quality of the pass from Odegaard is brilliant. But he does really well to make the run and to play the ball back to Pepe, who then, from the time he gets it, does something superb. It's just fantastic.
So good.
And I think you're right. Yeah, I mean, the subs did change the game. Again, I don't know that he had a great deal of choice, but he could easily... He could, I think, and we'll come to Lacazette now because we haven't even mentioned him yet, and I think he needs a mention because there might have been a game or this might have been a time in the past when Arteta would have put on Nketiah for Lacazette.
Yeah,
because I think Lacazette had a difficult game. He works very hard, and I can't take any of that away from him, but... It just wasn't quite there for him last night. The first touch wasn't brilliant. The layoffs weren't quite happening. The shooting, I mean, he was shooting. I think he ended up with 7 or 8 shots, something like that. But none of them were particularly threatening. There was one in the second half where he drew a good save from the goalkeeper. Like, he was trying his hardest, but it wasn't really working. And I think if we had had another senior forward option on the bench, I'm pretty sure he would have... come off.
Yeah, I agree.
So I have to say that I'm, you know, even though the goal went down as an own goal, I think Lacazette can take a great deal of heart from his part in it, if you like. The fact that he was there, he made the combination, the little flick around the corner to Pepe was so good. The pass back from Pepe was perfect because there were a couple of occasions in this game where I think it was Xhaka for Martinelli and Partey for Saka, where they had the chance to play that kind of pass and they overhit it. So the pass from Pepe was very good. And when you're a striker who hasn't scored in a while, it clearly has an impact on your confidence. You know that despite what, however people want to talk up the other aspects of your game, goal scoring is what people judge strikers on. How they produce it in time, that becomes an issue. But what they produce, how frequently and everything else. Lacazette hadn't scored since December 26th. He was well overdue a goal. I think it's normal and right to demand goal scoring from your centre forwards, even if you can talk about how the role of a centre forward has changed a little bit in certain teams where that player in that position can often be seen as like a facilitator for the guys either side who are the more prolific goal scorers. But I don't think we're there yet, so we need those goals. And I think Lacazette, as a forward who's spent his whole life scoring goals, will have been hyper aware of the fact that he hadn't. And sometimes you just need one like that. I mean, it's not officially his goal, but I think it's his goal, you know, for the endeavor, for the effort that he put in. I think it's his goal. And I hope that it can prove to be, it can take some of the weight off him a little bit, because it did feel like he was playing with the burden of 2 months of not scoring.
It reminds me of when you start a career mode on FIFA and you're just trying to build the stats up and it's just everything goes through you. You know, when you're like doing your one-on-one player guy, and you're just like, and your energy is zero after 25 minutes because you've just been covering all the ground and trying all the shots. There was one in the second half where he had his back to goal about 12 yards out, I think, and he could have just laid it off to Ødegaard. And he tried to, you know, turn 180 ping it at the top corner, and I was just like, this is, for all of contract Laka's strengths, this is the downside of contract Laka. You know, contract Laka playing for, you know, it is like, you know, when people have contract years, when they know that all of a sudden they have to, they're almost in the shop window, and it's like, yeah, I get it, but you can't fault his work rate, his effort, his energy, and his genuine, I think, passion.
Yeah.
I have to admit, I was a little bit concerned about Laka when Aubameyang left. I was a little bit worried how he would handle that, because they were obviously very close. And without knowing what had gone on internally, I was a little bit worried about whether he might kind of down tools a little bit and be like, well, you treated him like this, I'm not really that bothered anymore. But taking the armband and his work rate and, like I say, effort and stuff like that since then has been amazing. It's so weird that he's not scored for 2 months. Although there is part of me that thinks, like, have we only played like 4 games since December? Like, the fixture list has been so sparse.
I mean, that's fair to say that it has been a bit scant in terms of fixtures. So
yeah, but still, it's, I think for him internally in the squad, within the club, that will go down as his goal. It doesn't really matter whether it's down his goal statistically.
And you could see from his reaction and from the reaction of his teammates, you know, he was flooded on the sidelines by not just the players on the pitch, but by the subs. You know, that they were absolutely delighted for him as well. You know, and the commitment, the passion, you know, this is a guy, realistically, I know there's talk of a contract and everything else, but realistically, this is a guy who's probably going to go in the summer, and you can switch off, or it can be a dangerous time for a player, or you go into self-protection mode where you don't want to run that extra bit. You don't want to tweak a hamstring. You don't want to risk an injury, but there's none of that with him. And, you know, we can acknowledge that our central striking options are imperfect, but I was genuinely delighted for him above and beyond the fact that we scored a 96-minute winner in important circumstances in a huge game against rivals who, you know, let's face it, if they'd won last night, they'd be ahead of us in the table right now. And now we're 5 points ahead of them. That is how big that swing is. So it was huge. It was huge. And it was great to see. And I really do hope that it does lift some of that burden off him, because we need some goals from him, and we need maybe a couple of goals from Eddie as well, because Smith Rowe, Saka, Odegaard, Martinelli, you know, as we saw last night, sometimes they're not going to be able to produce those moments that we need. And it's normal to expect your centre forward to score some goals along the way too. So if it lifts the shackles off him a little bit, then it's going to be a hugely positive goal.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, we talked to Wrighty about this quite a lot on Wrighty's House, and, you know, you can't really ask for many better people to whose brains to pick with stuff like that. But he said it's like, you know, it's the game-by-game thing. We were talking about it with Aubameyang the other day, because Aubameyang got a hat-trick for Barca. One of them just came off his back.
Yeah.
And And it's similar to what you were saying before about how strikers, even with the changing role of a number nine, they still have this very tangible metric that they're judged on.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like a right back can be like, oh, he's really thriving, you know, look at his kind of dribble pass stats and stuff like that. It's just like, no, goals, that is the thing, rightly or wrongly, what they're judged on. You know, I think that with Laka, never once since he's joined Arsenal has he ever looked like he hasn't given 100%. And even when he's been a little bit grumpy, and I think he is a bit grumpy sometimes, but I kind of quite like that. At the moment with this young core, it's interesting what you said about, you know, Smith Rowe, Saka, Martinelli, Ødegaard, super young core around him, and he's kind of like that old grump, and he just has that little that vibe sometimes where he's just like, fuck this, or like, fuck that, especially since he started shaving his head properly. Shaved head Laka is gnarly, you know, and I think that it's just really, I think for him, it's going to be really interesting to see what the next few games are like for him now that that's happened, because I do think that was playing on his mind.
Yeah.
And you could see it a few times where he was trying just a little bit too hard to get rid of that. Maybe passing up better opportunities to lay it off. But yeah, I mean, there's part of me that it's not just part of me, there's quite a large part of me, I think, that would like to see if the terms were decent for him to stay, even if he's not going to be first choice, because I think he is such an interesting component within that squad. I think a lot of what's going on at Arsenal at the moment, not wanting to go too far outside it, but a lot of it is like squad makeup and a lot of those intangibles, that togetherness, that kind of solidarity, that vibe that seems to be around the squad at the moment. He seems to be a major part of that. And that's something that I don't worry about a little bit, but it would concern me slightly. You know, if you remove him from that, you're going to have to make sure that whoever comes in to replace him is that number nine. Because remember, Ketty is probably going to go as well, right? So,
yeah. So
you're going to have to add, even if Lacazette stays, you should probably be looking, depending on what happens with Balogun on loan, you're probably going to be looking at getting at least two strikers in the summer. So I personally would love to see him stay, but I think the terms have just got to be right, because what Arsenal have done a really good job on over the last couple of years is addressing that wage bill.
Yeah.
And clearing off the hugely overpaid, underperforming players. And, you know, if Laka wants like 250 grand a week or something, you just can't do that, I don't think, anymore.
No, you've got to learn those lessons.
Yeah. A lot of that will also be based on what other offers he has from elsewhere.
Can we talk about how, on top of the sheer euphoria of scoring a late winner in a game like this, in the sixth minute of injury time, can we talk about Wolves' contribution to the fact that there were 6 minutes of injury time? I think there's a bigger discussion to be had about time wasting in football. And, you know, I'm not here to criticize it by any means, because Arsenal have done it. We did it in our last game against Wolves. I think Gabriel got a yellow card for it. They were doing it from the first half. The commentator on the stream that I was watching on went, well, they're doing it. Well, Arsenal did it in the first game. I was thinking, well, you know, we were kind of down to 10 men and hanging on for our lives here. It's slightly different than doing it when you're 1-0 up after 20 minutes. There were moments where I think Wolves manufactured occasions where lots of time was taken up. The Semedo injury, which was a couple of minutes at least. I think they could have got the player off the pitch a bit quicker, but they didn't. And the whole Jimenez-Pudence substitution thing, when Jimenez got booked, and it was like, well, no, I'll go off over there. Clearly predetermined when the manager talks to his team about how he's going to make changes. Like, if we're going to make a change and the game state is this, go off the far side and, you know, take as much time as possible. And it backfired because it provided us those extra minutes that we needed. So I'm very much an advocate that, like, well, if you live by the sword, you might die by the sword from time to time. And I found that aspect of our win even more enjoyable because of all the stuff that's gone on about celebrations and how you should celebrate and when you should celebrate and if you should celebrate at all. You know, this part that they played in our win last night is kind of like the icing on the cake.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with my pure Arsenal fandom is, you know...
Yeah, leave your Arsenal hat home, on for this one.
Sitting at home on my own, on the sofa, watching it, a man deep into his 30s, giving the TV, who can't even answer back, the fucking both fingers, being like, fuck you, have that. But there was part of me afterwards that realized, when I read that thread from Johnny Singer, which was quite good about, he kind of clocked up all of the time that was wasted. And actually, I'm going to come with a little bit of an interesting take here. I think Wolves were actually hard done by, because they wasted so much time that there probably should have been another 4 minutes on top of it. And if Arsenal scored when they had, then Wolves would have actually had an extra 4 minutes to try and get an equaliser.
And actually, yeah, when you think about the chance that they had after we equalised,
exactly,
remember that? I mean,
yeah,
that's another thing that's sort of been lost in the joy of this particular win, is that when we equalised, they had a really good chance and the ball squirted just, I think Gabriel got a touch on it and it went for a goal kick. The referee didn't see it. But boy, oh boy, that was close. And you're right. Yeah, maybe they would have had an extra few minutes.
But I think this was the whole thing about Martin Atkinson last night. And I think that I don't like going after referees too much, because I think some of it, people take valid criticism of referees and it turns very nasty very quickly.
Mm.
But I think the thing that really frustrates me is that they don't use the tools that are in place. The tools are there.
Yeah, stopwatch, fuck's sake.
Stopwatch. Use the stopwatch. Like, no one is going to complain. If you can turn around after the game and say, listen, here is why there were 11 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the game, or 9 minutes of stoppage time at the end of the game, no one's going to actually, weirdly, a lot of people would be like, wow, fair play. They're actually adding up the clock.
They're doing it, yeah.
But with the not consulting VAR, and I don't know whether VAR just didn't bother looking at it, or if they did, they just said to him, usually it comes up if they're checking, right?
Mm.
Whether they give it or not. It didn't seem like there was a check in place. I genuinely think if that happens after 12 minutes, it's a penalty. And also, Semedo's in trouble because he's stopped a goal-scoring opportunity. I know it's in the box and it's different now and all the rules have kind of changed about that. And he does make a genuine attempt, I think, but still stops a goal-scoring opportunity. But also, there were just really basic things that Atkinson missed, like stuff that was so easily visible from watching it on TV. Like, he didn't give a corner to Arsenal in the first half that was really easy to see. Yeah. He didn't give Wolves a corner that was really, really easy to see. I think it was Raul Neto was like complaining about it. So there was just these real basic things that seemed to not be taken care of. And I think that led to the overall lack of authority on the game, I think. It really felt like he didn't have a lot of authority. Like, even when, you know, the Cody Benjamin White thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Which I think is a dive, right? But to be honest,
I do too. Yeah.
But also, Cody, I don't know if it happened on the feed that you were on, but
yeah,
it was on Sky in Germany. Yeah, it focused on him and he screams at Atkinson for like 20 yards as he's charging towards him, pointing, all of this kind of stuff. And you can kind of make out what he's saying. And I was like, if that's Granit Xhaka, you know,
it's
a booking. Like, or to be honest, if it's Gabriel, it's a booking. And I don't like doing this whole conspiracy theory kind of like, if it was us kind of thing, because fuck it, whatever. There are 20 teams in the Premier League. But I do think sometimes that, you know, you've got a kind of an English centre-back who, you know, interviews quite well post-game on Sky and has a bit of banter with the lads and stuff like that.
And
you could see Cody all game. Whenever there was a stoppage, he was right next to Atkinson the whole time, just talking to him. And I really wish Arsenal did that a little bit more.
I agree. I'm not sure it's necessarily in our nature, but maybe when we get some more players in the England squad with a bit more seniority, we might feel inclined to do that. Ben White might well be one of those players.
Yeah.
I thought that was absolutely a dive. But fair play to him. There was another moment where, like, it was bad play from Ben White. It was there's a clip doing the rounds where he passes the ball. It could be straight to Ruben Neves. I'm not quite sure who it is. And Neves looks to play a pass to Jimenez, but Ben White, as he's running back, just kicks his heels very deliberately, cynically.
Yeah, I saw that.
Kicks his heels. I mean, it's terrible. He gives the ball away, then makes the most obvious foul you will ever see in your life. But when I said I loved it on Twitter this morning, I didn't necessarily mean the cynicism of it, although I'm very much a fan of that kind of cynicism from central defenders. I love it, really, when we do it. But what I loved was we got away with it. We got away with something, and like in a season where it feels like so much stuff has not gone our way, where decisions aren't in our favor, where even the smallest thing is punished to the most, to the maximum level, the fact that we got away with something just as small as that was hugely entertaining to me.
Yeah, definitely. Sorry, one thing before we go on. I think I said Raul Neto. I meant Pedro Neto.
That's fine. Nobody
minds. Silly boy. So, I mean, if you want to chop that, you can chop that. I'll just say Neto.
No, it's okay.
My bad. I called...
We'll call up the Neto family afterwards and offer them our...
my deepest apologies. Sorry, Pedro. Yeah. I did this the other day. I can't remember who it was, but I basically got a footballer and an actor confused, because they have a similar sounding surname, and I use the actor's first name and the footballer's surname. I was just like, what the hell? Sorry, Andrew, I lost my train of thought.
We were talking Ben White. Look, there's no need to go on. I'm just talking about that bit. One final thing that I think we have to talk about is what a win like this means in broad terms, in these circumstances, as we talked about, coming from behind for the first time under Mikel Arteta to win a game, being behind at halftime, not just from behind, you know, dealing with Wolves' defensive parsimony and all that kind of stuff. And what these kind of results mean for a group that is growing and developing and coming together, you could see, obviously, in very basic terms, how much it meant to them afterwards, because they've won a game and they've won it in those circumstances and everyone would celebrate. But I think when we're talking about the progression and development of a young team and we're looking for things, intangibles, if you like, you can't measure character or spirit or whatever you want to call it, non-givey-uppiness. You can't measure those things. But we can all see a team that doesn't have those qualities and doesn't have those characteristics. We can spot them a mile away. We've had them at Arsenal
recently. Yeah.
This group of players has something about them in that regard. And to me, that's another really encouraging part of what we did yesterday. It's not always going to work out for you, but I think moments like this and results like this allow you to feel as a group of players that you can do it again and you can do it again. And that when games are looking like they're going away from you, it's not a foregone conclusion that you're going to drop all the points. You have the ability to turn it around and take three.
It's all about just building, for want of a better term, but almost like muscle memory. You know, this is a side who beat Spurs, beat Manchester United, drew with Chelsea.
Beat Leicester,
ran Man City extremely close at the Etihad. And Arsenal have beaten them twice in the league. They've done the double over them this season. Also, the coming from behind thing at halftime just adds that extra level of belief in scenarios like that at later games. And I think it's all about just adding the blocks. You know, just keep adding little bits here and there that generate progress or contribute to the progress. But it's so hard to measure because it extends outside of the squad. Because I, for example, I can't remember seeing a game at the Emirates where the crowd are like hyping everything after half an hour, like it's the last 5 minutes of a game and Arsenal are chasing a winner. It started early because I think people are really invested in this team now, like I said earlier on. And I think that the whole thing together, the whole combination, and you continually adding little bits where, you know, okay, this is a good team. This is a team that historically Arsenal, who are set up in a way where historically Arsenal just don't do that well against. And we've all seen those kind of games where we've just been camped in their half for an hour and we've created nothing, but we've had all the ball, or we've hit the post, or we've done this. And I think getting through those or passing those tests, and this is, again, the thing that I'm saying, this is a team in progress, and it's all about passing those tests or passing these little checkpoints that down the line, they're going to have to draw on that experience from, you know?
Yeah.
Because it might not be It might sound a little bit over the top to say, but being 1-0 down against a side like Wolves at halftime and coming back and winning the game might really help Arsenal. Say, for example, if they're 1-0 down against Manchester United at the Emirates this season, when they come to the Emirates later on in the season, that experience of doing it against Wolves might really help then. And this is another thing about last night, is that because of the games in hand, picking up the points in those games in hand, because Arsenal do have to play Chelsea and they do have to play Spurs. Do have to play Spurs and they do have to play Manchester United. So they're playing teams around them. So it's just, there isn't one singular important factor from this game that I think is the reason why it's so important. It's just, it contributes to so much that is really, really important in Arsenal progressing back to a point where they're consistently challenging for top four again.
Yeah.
You know?
I know. Look, it's a big win. It feels like shades of the 2-1 win over Leicester in 2016. I know the stakes at that particular point of that season were much, much higher, but we have to really take the positive from this one and make sure that we don't fall flat in our next game as we did after that Leicester game. The euphoria, I think, is something that as fans and players we can share, but the important part is to keep this going. And the other thing I guess you would say about, you know, where we are and how we've got there is a measure of consistency to what we're doing and how we're doing it at this moment in time, which is another aspect of when you think about our top four chances. It gives you a bit of confidence because there has been consistency. It's not quite as roller coastery as it has been in seasons past. So look, it's promising, it's encouraging, it's enjoyable, and thank you for taking the time to talk about this one with me. I'm glad it was better than the last time, obviously after the Manchester United game, and I'm glad it was better than you thought it was going to be at halftime yesterday.
Yeah, thanks, Andrew. Next time, I hope it's the same.
Cheers, Ryan.
Cheers, Beth.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promoting for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Ryan. You can find him on Twitter. He is at Ryan Hun, at Ryan Hun. And of course, he is the co-host of the Stadio podcast along with Musa Okwanga. And he appears on Righty's House as well with the one and only Ian Wright. Okay, in the interests of getting this podcast out for everybody to listen to, I'm going to leave it there for now. I just want to take a moment to say to all of our Arsenal supporting friends in Ukraine right now, I know there are many of you out there that I'm thinking of you, and I hope that you and yours can stay safe and well I can't even begin to imagine what it's like, how scary and terrifying it must be. So for all that it's worth, sending you lots of love and lots of support from here. Right. To all of you, thank you very much as always for being here. Thank you for listening, and we will catch you on the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye. Okay, rather than an end bit today, I did talk in the first bit of the show that we might just touch base with James, and we have done exactly that. James, goodly morning.
It is. It is a goodly, goodly morning indeed. How you doing?
I'm good, thank you. I'm good. I'm quite buzzing after last night, and have you had a chance to sift through the events of those 90 minutes? Yeah. Oh, no, sorry, those 96 odd minutes?
I have to say, it's quite an enjoyable way to go about it. I think I'm going to avoid more Arsenal games in future and then bask in the glow of victory after the fact is secured.
Oh.
I mean, it's interesting, actually. You know, I'm an Arsenal fan, season ticket holder, but I've missed some big Emirates Stadium moments in my time. I was on stage when Thierry Henry came back and scored in the FA Cup against Leeds. I remember coming off stage to a text message about that. And I was abroad when Danny Welbeck scored against Leicester at the Emirates Stadium. So I think they need to keep me away from that ground. You know, I think
maybe so.
Maybe I'm a bad omen. Who knows?
We'll do a little bit of a GoFundMe for you.
Yeah, need to keep me employed as an actor. That's the real trick. If only I had any talent. But yeah, incredible result. And it was a weird one for me because my show starts at 9 o'clock and
The
game was a 7:45 kickoff. So I had this conundrum of, like, I was in my dressing room thinking, like, do I put the game on my phone? Like, it's a high risk strategy. You know, if we're losing, then I'll go on all feeling all distracted and distressed. So I told myself I wasn't going to watch it. But then I did the worst possible thing, which is that I didn't watch it. I just intermittently checked the score, like, every 3 minutes. Yeah. So, you know, I saw, penalty appeal denied. And then I saw we'd given a goal away, and I logged on to Amazon and watched the goal and thought, oh my God. And, you know, Wolves are such a difficult team to play against when they're ahead in front, as the stats show and as the time wasting demonstrates too. So I went on knowing we were losing.
Let me ask you a question about this because, you know, yeah. I've never done and never will do a one-man show on stage in front of people. Yeah. But I guess if I was doing it, even if I was pretty comfortable with the material and I'd done it before and I knew what I was doing and I felt confident, et cetera, et cetera, I imagine that you kind of have to get yourself into a little bit of a zone, right? When you know the curtain is coming up, you know there are going to be these sea of faces looking at you. Here we are now, entertain us, kind of thing. You know, there has to be like a measure of concentration and all that kind of stuff. So I completely get what you're saying about not wanting to be distracted by something as, in inverted commas, trivial as football. But I mean, how do you possibly separate the two things from your life? Because,
well, very difficult. Very difficult. And like I say, I failed. I mean, I told myself I wasn't even going to look at the score. I obviously completely failed to do that. And then, yeah, I suppose it got to half time and then I had to kind of go into the theatre and the audience were about to come in. And that's when I managed to kind of focus up and think about the task at hand. Yeah. But there was an extraordinary event during the show, so, which I did tweet about, so you may have seen. But
yeah,
so the show, the show is like, you know, it's a comedy show, but it's pretty theatrical. Like, you know, it's there's a sort of an element of kind of audience involvement, but it's pretty gentle. You know, once it's on its rails, I'm doing the show. And, you know, usually it's kind of pretty similar night after night. And there are bits in the show where I show clips or like slides or videos. Mm. And when I do, I sort of just go and sit at the side on this little stool. And at one point, about halfway through the show last night, I went and sat on the stool. And something that's never happened, I must have done this show 50 times, maybe more. I felt a hand on my back. And a guy had come out of the audience, put his hand on my shoulder, leaned into my ear, in full view of the rest of the audience, by the way, leaned into my shoulder and just went, 2-1 Arsenal, Lacazette winner, 95th minute. And then just backed away and returned to the audience. And I honestly, it was so funny. He came up to me after the show. He was like, I'm so sorry. It came up on my watch and I just had to tell you. And he said the previous video where you'd sat down, you'd had about 30 seconds to kind of, sit there before you got up again. And he said, the problem is I came up and told you the score and then I realised the video ended 2 seconds later and suddenly you had to be doing the comedy show again. And he was absolutely right. I had to be like, okay, thank you, and just immediately carry on with the show. But it was very reassuring. It meant I could finish, you know, with any lingering doubts or concerns I had in my mind evaporated. So on the one hand, it was strange and unusual, but on the other, I appreciated it. The theatre staff came up to me after the show and they were all like, were you all right? We've never seen that before, someone getting up on the stage to try and talk to someone during a show. We hope you're okay. Let us know if we want to like introduce any security measures or like do an announcement before the show. And I had to just be like, no. He was telling me the Arsenal score. He knows I'm a massive Arsenal fan and he was just telling me the Arsenal score.
Oh, that is genuinely hilarious, isn't it? It's just fucking brilliant. Like the idea that this guy, I mean, you kind of have to get out of yourself in a way to be part of the audience and then to get up and to go to the guy on the stage and tell you, I mean, I would feel you'd have to lose pretty much all your inhibitions to do that. And I'm pretty sure this guy is like must be a listener maybe to the show. So if you're listening, I'm not trying to be disparaging in any way, but probably just a normal guy who got like absolutely carried away in the euphoria of getting that notification on his watch in the middle of a comedy show.
And he said to me afterwards, he was like, you know, I'd been watching the first half in the pub. So he was already kind of emotionally invested in the game, as I guess we all were. Probably had a couple of drinks and, felt the need to tell me during the show on stage. And I honestly don't mind at all. It didn't really seem to affect the show in any way. And it was great to hear. And it meant I could come off and, as I say, absolutely bask and revel in the celebrations.
Yeah.
And, you know, They didn't want to see us celebrating again, and unfortunately they really had to put up with it. And those scenes from the Emirates last night in the crowd and on the pitch just looked brilliant. I mean, what a big win.
What a big win you missed.
I know. But honestly, I'll miss them all between now and the other season if they're going to be like that. I mean, that it's really, really good.
Yeah.
And January was tricky for lots of reasons, but February we've had 3 really good results, 9 great points, big steps.
I
feel great about it. And honestly, it's not a question of like, oh, and now we're going to get top 4 definitely and we're on the home straight. I'm convinced there's a roller coaster to come and ups and downs. I feel certain of that. You know, what happened with Spurs beating Man City and then losing to Burnley, it demonstrates that. But it's impossible to not feel energised about, you know, the group and particularly the connection between the players and the fans, which just feels stronger than it has for such a long time.
Yeah, I agree. We could probably and will probably talk about this a little bit more on Monday when we do the Arsecast Extra. So I don't want to keep you too long. And thank you. Thank you for dipping in just to tell us that story, which is a fantastic story. And there are so many things that people can enjoy online today. Brilliant clips doing the rounds, the celebrations. We've got to give a shout out to David Price, one of the Arsenal photographers who took an incredible picture of Aaron Ramsdale celebrating right in front of Ruben Neves, which is like, put that in a fucking gallery somewhere. Actually, just build a gallery specifically for that photograph. The Aaron Ramsdale gallery. Yeah, unbelievable. So loads for people to sink their teeth into. We leave it there. James, thanks a million. Enjoy the weekend and we'll catch you on Monday.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.